brought to you by Penguin.
We Should Not Be Friends, written and read by Will Schwalbe.
In memory of Dan Frank and Sonny Mehta, who taught me volumes about books and friendship. All friendships of any length are based on a continued mutual forgiveness. Without tolerance and mercy, all friendships die. David White. After all, what can a first impression tell us about someone we've just met for a minute in the lobby of a hotel? For that matter, what can a first impression tell us about anyone? Why, no more than a chord can tell us about Beethoven or a brushstroke about Botticelli. By their very nature, human beings are so capricious, so complex, so delightfully contradictory, that they deserve not only our consideration, but our reconsideration, and our unwavering determination to withhold our opinion until we have engaged with them in every possible setting, at every possible hour. Amor Towles, A Gentleman in Moscow. The only way to have a friend is to be one. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Note to the listener. This is a story about the 40-year friendship Chris Maxey and I have shared. While the writing is mine, the remembering has been a joint effort. The dialogue is, in most cases, what we recall having said or heard. When memory failed us both, we did our best to conjure up what we believe we would have said. For the details throughout, we relied on contemporaneous notes we kept and interviews with others who were with us on parts of our journey. The emails we exchanged are quoted verbatim, but our letters have proved unfindable, so we've recreated them as best we could. In a few instances, we've changed names and identifying details to preserve the privacy of people with whom we've lost contact. We've checked our memories against the facts whenever possible, but friendships like ours proceed largely unchronicled, which is one of the reasons I wanted to write this book, and Maxey wanted to be my partner in it. We may have misremembered some of the dialogue and descriptions, but we've tried to get the spirit right. Chapter 1, Bright College Years. Nerds and Jocks. By the time I was a junior at college, I'd already met everyone I cared to know. I was friends with most of the other gays and lesbians. This wasn't difficult because, in the early 1980s, not many of us were out of the closet. I was also cordial with most of the lesbians and gays who were still in the closet. It was pretty obvious who they were. I knew the theater people, a group that overlapped almost completely with the gays and lesbians, uncloseted and closeted. I knew many of the people who styled themselves writers. I knew absolutely everyone in my major. There were only a few of us who had chosen to get degrees in Latin and Greek, so it would have been Herculean not to. And I knew a splattering of visual artists, a handful of comparative lit majors, the odd philosopher, and three mathematicians, along with an assortment of other obsessive, quirky characters with whom I'd fallen into conversation in a dining hall line or bonded over cinnamon toast at Naples Pizza when we should have been studying. I also knew those I didn't want to know, the jocks. And they didn't seem to want to know me. In the dining halls, they filled boisterous tables. They wolfed down epic platters of scrambled eggs. They wore baseball caps backwards, and moved in packs. The jocks and I were like planets in different orbits, circling one another but not colliding. I felt that if we did, I would be obliterated. During the spring of my junior year, I'd taken to wearing a turquoise, acid-washed, blue jean jacket, and I wore a studded leather wristband that served as a wallet, a souvenir from Los Angeles, where I'd spent the previous term away from school, working in the realer world. I had my hair permed down the center, but cut shorter on the sides, in a recent fit of enthusiasm for the artist who was still then known as Prince, and also for the look of a singer named Adam Ant.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?